Welcome to the Oh For Food's Sake podcast, where we unwrap the struggles of working in the food industry so that you can thrive in what you do best while sustaining a rewarding and fulfilling career or business. We are your hosts, Lucy Wager, food industry consultant,
and Amy Wilkinson, coach and facilitator, bringing you our expertise of starting a food brand and working in the food industry for the last 20 years. Our podcast is for you to find new ways to cope with the daily struggles, but mostly to inspire you to work on what's not working to ultimately improve your career or business long term.
So, hi everybody, welcome to episode 13. This is the second of our shorter episodes. I'm looking at Amy thinking, it is our second, isn't it? It is our second. And today we are going to be talking about something which a listener actually asked us to chat about, which was basically how to stop MPD being overlooked in a smaller manufacturer. And when we were chatting, we were sort of saying, well, actually, this is relevant to all size of manufacturer, because I've noticed it more, I think, in bigger manufacturers, because smaller manufacturers can, very small, tend to be all over the MPD, at least in the beginning.
Yeah, like then, founding companies, yes, and where it's really, really important in the lifeblood. It's kind of like
where they start,
a medium size, and it's like, okay, we just want to do what we've always done because
yeah,
we can replicate that, and that's easy.
Exactly. And it becomes harder because then the day-to-day takes over. And so, great topic. Thank you very much for the listener who suggested that, because it's a tricky one actually, because there's lots of nuances, but it's going to be a good one.
It's a really interesting topic, actually, for me as well. So I moved from a big manufacturer to what I would call a medium-sized manufacturer. And when I moved there, I can remember just thinking, oh my goodness, there was literally zero. I mean, there were procedures, but they were really outdated procedures in place. And actually, one of the things that, and this isn't me saying that every single manufacturer has to have a gated process and whatever, and it was before gated processes were really a thing, but actually having some procedures in place did help to get the other departments to have more trust in MPD. So they kind of knew what the boundaries were. They knew, you know, having feasibility meetings, that sort of thing. It meant that it didn't feel like MPD had completely free rein and that they were just coming up with ideas on the hoof kind of thing, that some sort of procedure really, really helped. And it also helped with the overall trust. The team I looked after was concept and process, you know, to have those procedures so that it wasn't just going to be like, oh, we just fancied doing a factory trial today, or we just fancied getting these ingredients out of the factory. Having procedures in place for those things and getting the buy-in from other departments really did help.
So, and it's a fine line, because sometimes the very structured procedures can stifle MPD and can stifle that sort of creative innovation pipeline. But I think there is a point in a business where you get too big to not have any procedures and it can become chaos.
Yeah.
And I suppose the listener, I don't even know how small that manufacturer was, because everybody's idea of small is different. And when you move from a very big business, or you start your own business like I did, and you have like zero procedures and basically you make all the decisions and you just go, oh, today I'm going to do a factory trial and this morning I did the kitchen sample, you know, it's a completely different world.
Yeah.
But you do get to a point where you do need to put some structure in place. And when you start, if you grow to the point where you start bringing other people in from different businesses where they are expecting procedure, mm-hmm, and expecting that sort of level of professionalism, if you like, it's really important, because you need them to buy into it. And this is something as well that we want to sort of really get across, is bringing everybody on the journey with you from as close to the start as possible.
Yeah, it really is about collaboration. So a lot of listeners will understand the term, but I will explain where we talk about a triangle. So if you are in MPD, you may well be in a triangle. Some different retailers call it different things, so different businesses call it something else. But where you commercial marketing and MPD have to work really, really close together. And I would say that that is your kind of inner circle. So you really need to build up a good relationship if you're an MPD technologist or manager with your commercial or marketing or category colleagues, because together you will be a force to be reckoned with. You know, you will be able to influence better within the business if you have each other as allies.
Mm. Yeah, that's absolutely true. And it's making sure that you're engaging with different departments. So within different businesses, there might be different bottlenecks. I was going to say, bottlenecks probably isn't the right stumbling blocks or barriers. There might be blockers. Yeah. And it's understanding where they are and thinking about how you can influence those people or those groups of people, finding out what their issues are, what their problems are, and how you can solve those problems to get their buy-in.
Yeah. So yeah, really listening is such an important part of this. It's actually kind of preempting what their issues are going to be. But you are only ever going to get that if you kind of get an understanding of the different viewpoints of people within the business. So, you know, be curious and ask them questions, you know, particularly when they just a flat no. I always say avoid the word why too much. And I know like it and one of the innovation models is doing the five whys, but actually why can be a little bit like a toddler, can't it? Why? You know, but so think about open-ended questions to understand better what is influencing them to say no.
It's sort of trying to put yourself into their shoes. And when I was a concept technologist, like in my first graduate role, I definitely didn't know how to do that and was just terrified by people that would say no or cause me difficulties, or, you know, I just didn't know how to get around that problem.
I remember you telling me a bit of a story of that in that first business. Yeah. You want to share, or does it feel too raw to share?
I don't want to glaze over the details. Yeah, I don't want to embarrass the person, but I won't mention the name. We're trying to do a little stacked product, and the funny thing is sometimes these things sound so simple and easy that you just cannot understand why anyone would have a problem with it.
But in a factory that was highly automated, you were trying to bring in a different way of the product, basically.
Yeah. And I was a very young, inexperienced concept technologist and just kept being told no. I was being told, yes, we want to do it from the retailer. My whole department were like, yes, we've got to do it. The commercial manager was, yes, we've got to do it. And actually this brings up other issues as well, because as a young concept technologist, I probably wasn't being supported in the right manner either. Just thinking about that explanation there.
I'm thinking about, I know who the people were as well, so I can imagine. But we'll stop there.
But it was really difficult, and the factory were they were just pushing back and saying, no, we can't do it. No, we can't do it. We've tried to do it before. No, we can't do it. No, we can't do it. And to be honest, I can't actually remember. We did do it.
I was going to say, it definitely made it onto the shelves. I think it's still there.
So it was obviously pretty doable, but they really didn't want to do it. And it's really stuck in my mind. The only thing that stuck in my mind is this whole, no, we can't do it. No, we can't do it. No, we can't do it. We obviously did find a way around it, and I obviously managed to do it, but I can't remember the intricacies of what that was.
But looking back now, what would you have done differently now with all the experience you've got?
Well, I think I probably did what comes naturally to me, which is to try and understand what they're doing. But I think I would have found it very, very painful. I did find it very painful because I was, you know, young and inexperienced, but that's my nature, is to, well, not give up, be a pain in the ass, basically, probably. And try and understand what their problems were. And I spoke, because, you know, I then became a manufacturer myself, but the bit that I've probably never talked about before is my family business, where I worked from like 16 onwards and grew up in that environment, was a plastics business. And that was, it was a factory. I didn't work in the factory, but I worked in the accounts and sales team. And my dad is, he loves operations and that kind of thing. So,
talking about, because he made loads of puddings for you.
He did. Yes, he did. Well done, Dad. He's an avid listener. So I think I probably thought, well, you know, maybe my dad would react in this way, and why would they be reacting like this? I suppose, you know, the factory is, my dad always used to say, like, the factory is the engine room of the business. And
but that is worth mentioning, you know,
it
like
is.
Because I think it can be quite easy to kind of get in this silo thing, you know, and forget about the factory. But at the end of the day, you know, that is the lifeblood of the business.
Yeah.
So I would always encourage, particularly young graduates and stuff who haven't been exposed to lots of manufacturing, to spend time in the factory and really get to know.
Yeah.
Get to know the people and the processes, because also when you are then, say, you know, coming to a feasibility meeting or whatever it's called wherever you work, you know, to show that you've got some level of knowledge will help to gain the trust of those other people.
Yeah, it's so,
they're not just going to think, oh, you're just that NPD person that never comes in the factory. And
yeah, yeah,
got false nails on, so they're never going to come in the factory. Remember that one?
Oh God, yeah. So yes, I think that is. That's a really important point. We talked about that in our last episode, didn't we, where we were talking about the importance of spending time in the factory and feeling their pain, because it's the pressure, you know, that they've got, the day-to-day pressure of getting the product that's already being sold, and the, you know, the demand for orders. And in that particular factory, it was very hand-to-mouth, big volume, you know, it's lots of pressure. But I think the key thing is about not letting NPD being overlooked is also banging the drum within the business, finding a way to bang the drum within the business about the importance of NPD in the wider food industry.
Yeah.
You know, our food, and this country is renowned globally for the innovation and the NPD that we bring into the market every year. And that is because of the fabulous NPD people that we have in this country. And that shouldn't be overlooked, because to be able to put volume through factories and factories to maintain the business they have and create incremental growth, you have to have that NPD pipeline. And in order to do that, we have got to trial products.
Yeah, I think it's so important, and it can be hard in a particularly if you've got difficult personalities that you're coming up against. And I think in some businesses, you know, it's a real cultural shift, and that comes from the top. So whether it's you or somebody else needs to be helping you to influence at the top to really have that understanding of why it's so fundamental to the business, but also with a realistic lens on it, because at different stages of a business, it becomes more or less important, but it's always important. It's just, you know, to which degree it's important.
Yeah. And I mean, I think we've both got friends and experience in businesses where they've brought someone into the business because they recognize that they need to stimulate some activity in NPD. And it's a long, hard process because you're changing the way people think.
Yeah. And that's the reality of working in NPD, is you are constantly driving change. And as humans, we resist change.
Yeah.
So, you know, if it feels hard, know that there is a reason why it feels hard. You know, it's so rewarding. Like it is really, really rewarding working in NPD, isn't it? Because you just have that when it's on the shelf, you're like, I totally did that. I mean, obviously lots of other people are involved, but I came up with that concept.
Yeah, there's
nothing
better.
It is going to be difficult.
And it's funny actually, because that's just made me also think about like personality types, and the types of people that tend to work in NPD are people that enjoy change. And not everybody is like that.
No.
And so, and the different roles in the business have different personality types, and thinking about that and how to influence different personality types is a really good way of helping put yourself in those people's situations.
Just, you know, if I was somebody that didn't want to change, what would be my objections and what would be my arguments for why we can't do this? Because there will be, you know, there will always be that. And then I think, you know, recognizing all of those things and preempting them before you go in to make your case, you know, if you are making your case in a feasibility meeting or whatever, or if it's an innovation day, that sort of thing. And that's something we talked about, didn't we, when we were preparing for this episode, you know, get those people involved right at the start. You know, when you're doing innovation days or, you know, blue sky stuff or whatever the correct term for it is these days. I don't know, it changes all the time. But that's the, you know, the ideation bit. Get the people from different departments involved so that they feel like they're part of the journey, but they also understand where the concepts come from and that it hasn't just been plucked out of the air.
Yeah. And that could be simple things like, you know, in MPD, you're exposed to trends quite a lot and you begin to take it for granted. And when I say this quite a lot, I think when I was sort of entrenched in podology, I forgot about all that stuff. And like now I've like come out of the darkness again and I'm a bit like, you know, I'm sort of seeing all the trend stuff again. It's so inspiring and there's no reason why everybody in the business can't get glimpses of those exciting things. There's no reason that you can't share things in a feasibility meeting of, or a general MPD meeting or, you know, what are the sort of meetings where the whole business would be coming together?
Yeah, like a business update kind of meeting.
Yeah.
You know, years ago, I used to do like newsletters and stuff that went out with trends and stuff like that. Now, I don't think resource necessarily allows for that anymore because resource has got a lot tighter over the years. But you could do that on a quarterly basis. You know, this is the, and present to the business, you know, these are the trends we're seeing. So they get an understanding of what you do when you're not doing a factory trial, you know, that you're not just sitting there randomly coming up with ideas, that there's some rationale behind it.
Yeah.
So if the business you're in, I know the listener that wrote in was saying a very small manufacturer, it might not exist, but, it, you know, if you have some data, if you have some insight that's coming from the insight or category or marketing team, get them involved. Make sure it's really, you know, I always beat that drum because I had a lot of years in insight, but it is so important because if you can present data to people that like data, if you can present pictures to people that like pictures, give food to people that like food, give them something to eat, you know, thinking about the ways everybody absorbs information in different ways. But if you get the people around you on board with creating a compelling case together, then you're more likely to be able to get that change.
Definitely. And it, even in smaller businesses, there are ways of getting data without spending loads of money. So look at the creative ways that you can do that. Speak, you know, I went from having access to Kantar and Nielsen data to not being able to get it at all. But I realized that actually you can still talk to Kantar. You can still access certain levels of information, which is still useful. And that can still give you some compelling information to share with the data lovers. So, you know, there's a will, there's a way. And it shows that you're willing, you know, it's sort of.
I think it shows that you've done your research. It shows that you're passionate and all of those things. And I think that is part of what you want to do. You want to create a passion and excitement in the business for new things. So they're not automatically seen as something that's going to be difficult. It's seen as a positive challenge, not as a, oh, here they come again.
Yeah.
What are they going to, what complications are they going to put in the factory this time?
Yeah. And another sort of thing that I've learned as well is people love being asked advice for their advice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So
that's massaging somebody's ego. That's a really good little psychological tip.
But I think the first, it was my mum that gave me this advice like throughout my life. And I never really used it until I got a bit more confident to use it. And it does really work. And actually it's really helpful because that enables you to get that insight of what that person's pain is directly from the horse's mouth.
And that's what it's all about. So understanding what their objections are, and then you can keep questioning and come to and make it feel like you're coming towards a solution together. That's the thing, you know, the end game for everybody in a business that that works together is should be the same end game, and hopefully that's clear. It's not always in my my experience. Sometimes that's not always that clear. But that's a whole another episode, isn't it?
Yeah, and but I think it's worth saying.
Sorry, go.
I think it's worth saying as well that sometimes, you know, I imagine that some people might be listening to this and thinking, "I've tried all this, I've done all this, and I'm just not getting anywhere." And so, sometimes you might need to look at other options, and don't keep banging your head against a brick wall if you're unhappy and you're fighting a losing battle.
Yeah. At the end of the day, if you are unhappy at work and it is getting to the point where you have tried everything and there's a big ship to turn and you just have not got the energy to turn it, be okay with that, you know, and you know, you can make decisions whether that is to just stop fighting the fight or whether it's to go and work somewhere else. You know, sometimes that's the decision that you make, isn't it?
Yeah, because you do work in MPD if that is the person that we're talking to, and you need to be able to flourish and show your capabilities. And if you're in a business where that isn't ever going to happen, then you need to look elsewhere, I think. And I mean, I think we're stumbling over this because Amy and I are always very conscious that we're like, well, we've moved around quite a lot and we've made lots of changes, but not everybody wants to do that. But
no, yeah, because there's other reasons why you might want to stay in the job and whatever. Yeah. But I guess when it comes down to it, you know, there's lots of things that you can do, and we'll give a little synopsis in a minute of everything that we've gone through. But ultimately, you know, when you're at work, you want to be happy. And I think that's what we would always be big advocates of. So what needs to happen to make you feel that way is what's important.
Yeah. Well, that has gone super fast. These new quick episodes are keeping us on our toes.
Okay. So our three kind of top tips then are, I'll start with the first one, if that's all right, Lucy. So it's collaboration. So collaboration is key. So what we talked about was, you know, getting your allies that are really close to you, getting everybody involved from the start, making people feel part of the process, and making people feel like you are a professional within that team and collaborating with everyone.
Then the other big one is about understanding other functions, perspectives, and the people within those teams. So what motivates them, what their objectives are likely to be, understand why they're being difficult, spend time with the different areas of the business to really sort of get under the skin and understand how MPD could become more part of their plan. And by doing all that, you will naturally build a rapport with the rest of the business.
Yeah. And then the third one is around creating a compelling case. So this is my whole kind of, you need to have some, it's based on some sort of insight or trends or data. Make it exciting for people. Feed people, if that's going to help, you know, bribery with a bit of food's always good.
Yeah.
And make sure that it feels like you're all working together. So you're working together towards a common goal, and that goal is to meet the business needs.
So hopefully that has answered the listener's question, and some and others of you have found that useful. We're loving the feedback, and you know, any suggestions that you have.
Yeah, I think even suggestions about this subject, you know, if there's people out there listening, if you're listening and you're thinking, well, actually, I've been in that situation and this is what I've done.
Yeah.
Please, you know, message me or Lucy, and, you know, we will broadcast it in another episode, because that's what we want to do. We want to take all the knowledge that's out there and help as many people as we can.
And create conversation around it. This is my favourite topic of conversation, MPD.
So yeah, hopefully you found that useful. Do get in touch with us, and we'll see you next week.
See you next time. Thank you. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for joining us today, and we hope you've enjoyed it. Take care and catch us next week.
And if you'd like to get in touch with us personally, Lucy is available for consultancy advice and is able to offer a free discovery call. Find her on Instagram at @outtolaunchmpd or over on LinkedIn.
And if you want to reach out to Amy for any coaching or facilitation support, then you can find her at Amy Wilkinson Coaching on Facebook, Instagram, or LinkedIn. Thanks again. I'm Lucy.
And I'm Amy.
See you next time.